organization. So this particular attack, I think, reflects that logical culmination of the decades of criminalization of these schools and a situation in which the current Mexican government, it's really hard to tell where the state begins and where drug cartels end.
And the role of police?
The role of police here is very significant. Again, historically, when students mount any sort of social mobilization here to just demand simple things like food for these schools, an increase in scholarships, the protection of the infrastructure for these schools, they're instantly seen as criminals, and the police is then charged with attacking them. And in this last, or containing their mobilization, which often involves attacking them, in this particular mobilization, it's really significant to see that it was the police who first shot at them, the police who first detained these students and took them, and then it looks like handed them over to a criminal organization.
Do you believe the students are still alive?
It's very hard to tell. Honestly, the fact that the DNA showed that they were not those in this mass grave, to a certain extent, gives us hope. On the other hand, just the sheer amount of days that have now passed and not turning up, to me, points to a bit of a tragic end. Not to mention, just in the whole context of this is what, unfortunately, is now becoming the norm in Mexico, mass graves, assassinations. For a long time, political analysts have warned that the militarization of the drug war has been targeting social activists, not just the drug cartels. And I think this
Annalise Padilla, we have to leave it there. I'm sorry to say. Associate Professor of Latin American History at Dartmouth, speaking to us from London. We'll certainly continue to cover this. And Valeria Hamel, human rights activist, law student in Mexico City. That does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Aloha, everyone, and welcome to your community radio station, KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL, Halaiva, and K224CQ, Molawa'a. It's time once again for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, volunteers, board, or underwriters.
Aloha and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Robin and Paul, and on today's show, we are celebrating community on the Garden Island and communing with the compost guru, Amigo Bob Contesano.
Hey, it's a garden show.
Yeah, here we are.
Here we are back in the garden on the farm, here with you to celebrate an amazing year that we've had here. And Robin, thanks for standing strong in the garden with me. We're joined here by Mac, as we often are, and we're looking forward to hearing from you today, for you to reach out into the garden and share with us the abundance of your world so that we can continue to enrich yours.
Indeed. Great to be here. Well, lots of, I love this trickling water. It's beautiful. Makes me think of the moon and stars, actually.
Oh, yeah. Shall we jump in?
Let's do it.
We'd like to give you, we're going to devote a lot of our show today to celebrating this community radio station, but we are going to jump into our standard celestial session and look to the heavens above for inspiration and guidance on our planting and harvesting and other agricultural-related activities. We'll start today with the Hawaiian moon phase. Today's Hawaiian moon phase is informed by the 2014 Hanalei moon and tide calendar. Thanks to the Hanalei Watershed Hui and their partners in producing that publication, we're looking forward to the 2015 calendar coming out soon. Also, the Astronomical Applications Department of the U.S. Naval Observatory gives us our precise timing on rising and setting of the moon, as well as the sun. You can look up on their website. Today's Hawaiian moon phase is Ole Ku Lua. This is in Emi, or the third Anahulu, the third week in the lunar month. And Ole Ku Lua, this moon rose over Kauai actually last night at 11:48 p.m. She reached her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 6:29 this morning, and she will set at 1:08 p.m. this afternoon. And 50% of the moon's face being illuminated, because the last quarter moon was at precisely 9:13 a.m. this morning. The tradition in traditional thought with planting is that planting is discouraged on this day. However, there are many other activities that gardeners can perform during these non-planting days, not the least of which are to pick up the telephone right now and call in to pledge your support for Kauai Community Radio. For In the Garden on the Farm, we've set ourselves a pledge, a goal of $1,125. And no, that's the show total from the last one. Let's just pick that up. It's a good number. We'll go with 1125 as our goal. That means we really need each and every one of you who really values and cherishes this show to be generous. Give us a call at 826-7771, 826-7774. Or if you're off island, you can dial toll free 866-275-1112.
Yes, and when you're done calling us, the biodynamic look at things is a little bit different. We are in transplanting time once again, so as of today, the moon will be in Gemini, an air sign, making it time to work with our flowering plants. Good time to get some flowering plants in for the winter, maybe some more long-term perennial-type stuff. Thursday and Friday, the moon will be in Cancer, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leafy plants. I know when I've been chomping at the bit to plant some cabbages in my garden, one of my favorite leafy vegetables in the winter, and I'm wanting to get an early crop in myself. Saturday and Sunday, the moon will move into Leo, a fire sign, making it a good time to work with our fruit trees and with some winter rains slated to come our way, although might not be the best days, depending on the weather, of course, this weekend. We are watching the storm Anna move our way. Might not be doing too much planting, but at any rate, in this season, it is a good time to get some of those long-term plantings in, as the sky is generous with helping us water them in. And Monday, Tuesday next, the moon will be in an unproductive phase, so that'll give us some time to do other things, like call into the radio station. And we're just going to keep chugging along. One of the things that we really wanted to share with you today is to recap our last year with the show for all of you guys. And when we started looking at some of the guests we've had on the show, we were kind of blown away. Like, we've had a pretty star-studded year. And I just want to recap some of those. If you remember last year, almost a year ago, we had Hendrikus, and he was mainly talking about large equipment and the correct and proper way to use large equipment to change the landscapes.
As well, we spoke about humic acid with him. He's a real expert on that as well.
That's right. Among other things, some of the high-quality fertilizers and amendments that he produces. We've had One Song Farm, Lisa Fuller, and Son, both from One Song, on the show multiple times in this last year. Always a pleasure to talk with those guys about their incredibly beautiful and productive farm. We also had Michael Pilarski. Do you remember him? He was so great. He talked to us about permaculture and paradise culture and the kinds of things that we'd have in our paradise and how those generally don't include poisonous or toxic chemicals in any way. He was really inspiring to me.
Working with the nature spirits, too, I think was one of our focuses as
that's,
well. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. We've had Mylon Huber a couple of times, the all-star tree grafter from Kauai Nursery and Landscaping, helping us learn more deeply about certain varieties of fruit trees. He's always brilliant. If you remember Alima Fryer, she was doing a microgreens project and wrote a great book about microgreens that's still available as an e-book, the way to get food from seed to your plate in just 7 days.
And a perfect example about how we can all be gardeners, even if we think we have no place to actually plant a garden. We can do it on our windowsill.
That's right. And our ever-beloved plant pathologist from UH, Dr. Scott Nelson, he's been such an awesome guest for us and unraveling some of our pest issues that we've dealt with. Really an amazing guy. He's the Plant Doctor app guy. So you can send a picture of your ailing plant, and he'll identify the pest for you. That's pretty cool. We've had Stacy Sproat a couple of times talking about WIPA and tarot, and she's always a pleasure. Astrid Hoffman of the Living Seed Company in January, when we're all like really anxious to look at the seed catalogs that pour into the mailboxes and dream up our next year of gardening. Really lovely. Joseph Dunsmore, our local millipede expert, among other things. He's been such an amazing resource for us. He really understands soil in a much deeper way than I do, and he's able to translate that into terms that I can understand, and I hope our listeners as well.
If you just tuned in, this is In the Garden on the Farm. We're celebrating the cornucopia of guests that we've had over the past year. Robin and I took the helm, I think it was back in July of last year, as sort of a new version of this program that actually has been running the whole length of the life of KKCR. Robin and I started a new generation back in July, and right now we're reviewing some of the great guests we've had only since last October. And in addition to the ones that Robin has mentioned already, I don't know if you want to finish up that list, Robin,
and I'll
take over from there.
I would. We had Kun Hui Wang, one of the great researchers over at UH, working on our nematode issues for ginger and root crop farmers. And she was totally brilliant with her use of cover crops to control those, and lots of research there. Also from UH, Dr. Hector Valenzuela. Amazing resource and force of power for organic farming right there in the university. Lucky for us, Elijah Frank, who is still building community gardens one at a time, inspiring people in neighborhoods to get together and pool up their resources and grow food together that they can share. Really appreciate what Elijah is doing. Amigo Bob was on the show with us not a year ago, and he will be joining us in just a little while today. Neil Sams, if you guys remember the Orchid Month, that was like a month that really stands out in my mind, is so fun. Neil Sams of Orchid Alley, Tony Lydgate of Steelgrass Ranch talking about how to pollinate vanilla orchids for us, Katie Pickett, who has a backyard passion for orchids, and she's helped us through some of the common pest problems with them. And then wrapping up that month was Paul Miller. We did that pruning talk discussing the most proper way to prune your beautiful trees.
Beautiful. Well, it didn't stop there, folks. We just kept having great guests on the show, including Pat Gemlin from the Kauai Invasive Species Committee, keeping our gardens and farms safe from the most invasive pests that threaten our island habitat. We had as well Gray Hayton of the Church of the Pacific Community Garden, and as well a gleaning program that he does to help feed the North Shore folks who go to the food pantry there, not just the canned products or the processed foods, which are an important part of the food that they give out, but also providing lots of fresh, delicious, healthier food options for people there. Lisa joined us again. Lisa Fuller of One Song Farm joined us again with Janice McCarran Myers to discuss various local food to table programs that they do, and turning some of this raw produce into beautiful cuisine. We had Sherry of Rainbow Acres Cactus and Succulent Garden to talk to us about growing those really beautiful and exciting plants, the cactus, and what it takes in sometimes challenging environments here in Hawaii to grow those well. We've been joined a couple times this year by Glenn Tevis, extension agent of UHCTAR, and I think him, along with the other people you've mentioned, Robin, I think that the university sometimes gets a lot of flack about supporting chemical agriculture, but in truth, there are many individual people working sort of on their own or in combination at the University of Hawaii to forward organic agriculture, and they're working in the system to change the system. And it's great to have a program here where we can bring these people sort of out of the laboratory and out of obscurity into the light, so that people can come to know that You know, they're part of our community. They're very accessible. All these guests, I would say, without an exception, are happy to share their contact information for people who are interested in connecting more, finding out more about their work, more about their products. It's been a wonderful time. We've even had international guests like David Lobo, who's one of the premier coconut producers of low-bearing, high-production coconuts in the country of India. He was here for a short period of time and shared about their work there in India. John Parziali of Kauai Authentic and Gardens there in Molawa'a, sharing about small animal production or small herd production, cows specifically. We've had so many people. Aaron Arawalt talking to us about his Kauai fungi products and different mycorrhizal or myco inspired projects, both growing and consuming medicinal mushrooms. We had Philip Young and Trent Coffin, of course, the folks over at the Kauai Coconut Sanctuary, where they're doing lots of low-bearing coconut works, and as well set us up with David Lobo for an interview. But those guys are, you know, just a homegrown solution to food production here on Kauai and producing lots of plants that will feed you. We had Kenny Nalaser from Vanuatu talking about kava specifically on a show we did back in July, focusing in on the mind-altering plants of the Pacific. So we're really trying to stretch things out for you guys and give, you know, there are so many angles that can be taken from an agricultural botanical standpoint, and we really try to stretch the limits here on In the Garden on the Farm to inspire you to participate with us. And so many more. I'm just going to stop the list right now. But before we go on to our next section, I really want to ask you, if you're listening to the radio right now, whether you're hearing us broadcast over the airwaves or if you're tuning in at kkcr.org, I want to invite you to call now. In the time it takes to wax your surfboard, in the time it takes to tune an ukulele, in the time it takes to brew a single cup of Kona, you could make a pledge, call, and help pay for the programs on KKCR that keep you in touch with everything from the latest county council meeting to the best compost practices. The pledge can call takes about 2 minutes. The rewards last all year long. Please call us now at 826-7774 or 826-7771. Or if you're off island, you can call 866-275-1112 to help join us in this fall pledge drive.
And I'd like to let you know that we do have a special gift, thank you gift, lined up for this fun drive, and it is a solar-powered wind-up weather radio, something that might come in handy. And we're asking for sustaining memberships of $16.67 for the year, and you can get that radio after you make your first payment. So when you call up to pledge right now, we're going to play a little music to give you some time to call in so that you won't miss any of the great information that we've been sharing on the show. Do ask the volunteer about that radio pledge. I think you'll enjoy it. Mahalo.
And here we go with Crosby and Nash. So grateful for the two of these guys who did a benefit concert for us a little over a year ago last year in support of KKCR Kauai Community Radio and other nonprofits as well. And here's one of our favorite songs from them.
Thanks for calling.
We're on the road, was cafe code that you can live by.
On the floor, and so they got it.
Become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach.
Hold it.
No, listen, you can't clap if you can't carry the beat, so you gotta not clap, okay? I know that you're moved. But you gotta be moved in time.
All right, one more time.
Pick it up where you left it off.
What's that a code that you can't live by? And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye.
Now sing.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell will slowly go by. And beat them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why. If I told you, you would cry. So just look at them and
years.
You can't
know the fears.
Can you see
that your elders grew by? And so please help
your children.
Then we hit your ears. They seek the truth before they can.
We can't live in. Teach your children well. Their father.
Crosby and Nash with their beautiful Teach Your Children. Thanks again to those guys for coming out to support Kauai, the Garden Island, last year with that benefit concert that they held down at KCC. And we want to let you know that you're listening to In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio, celebrating the fun drive and celebrating the flourishing of this beautiful island through our intense cultivation of the land and our relations with the macroverse and the microverse. And we're going to jump back into Secrets of the Soil Builders, picking up from where we left off last week, Robin.
That's right. First, I want to just send out some mahalos for the callers. Thanks so much for calling in and pledging to the show. San and Jay, Steve, Jessica and Yarrow, and Shaka. Thank you guys very much.
Mahalo, mahalo.
Yes, we appreciate you. So
you are the wing beneath our wings, for sure. Thank you so much for supporting this show and this station.
Yes, and so we are going to just recap a little bit where we left off last week on our composting discussion, because we don't want to leave one single stone unturned when it comes to looking for compost material, compost inputs. We can scavenge everywhere. When I get in the mindset, it's like I'm looking, oh, can I use that? And oh, maybe I'll use that. I've been known to even pick up some questionable things. But we do want to remember that basically our compost is going to concentrate in our garden beds. And so the things that we choose to put in there over time are going to get concentrated. So when we look for our brown materials, because we discuss that kitchen scraps sometimes are ample enough green, depending on the size of compost pile that you want, to use. So what we're looking for a lot of times are high carbon materials or brown materials, and junk mail and shredded boxes can work. However, sometimes they have plastic windows or tape, and those are the kinds of things that it's really better off that we get out of there. Forest leaf litter, if it's gathered conscientiously in small amounts from here and there, is our...
And why is it that we would want to gather only small amounts? It seems like there's so much.
Sure. Well, because we don't want to impact the environment, the small ecosystem that's going on in that place. And leaving bare ground in a forest is really not a cool thing to do. The forest doesn't like that, you can tell,
right,
because it always has its carpet on, so to speak. But there is a lot of nice decay happening naturally there. So when you do gather up those materials, they're pretty potent mm-hmm. with biology. So those can be really potent inputs to use. And we also want to remember that we don't want to set up a composting system that we're turned off by, that's smelly or isn't nice, because we want to be encouraged to do more composting. So however you decide to build your compost, whether it's in cans or in bins or freestanding heaps, as we discussed last week, you want to make sure that it's an approachable system that you're not going to mind going out to tend. Yeah.
In addition to the browns that we've mentioned, I'm not sure if you got through the list, but a lot of the things that we might choose to put in terms of, that would be considered greens or high nitrogen, low carbon to nitrogen ratio, hence a large amount of nitrogen, which could be fresh cut weeds or fresh cut grasses. If we're short on brown materials, we can simply make piles and let these things age. And in time, those green grasses will turn brown. Doesn't really happen if you have grass clippings, because they just get so hot in a pile and they kind of putrefy and turn into a liquid and super hot. But if it's a larger grasses or weeds, we can allow those to turn brown, and then that can be the brown component that we add.
Sure. And we also just want to say, you know, we'd love for you to get on board with nitrogen-fixing trees. The leaves of nitrogen-fixing trees are just such excellent green addition to our compost piles, along with animal manures and many weeds. Not all weeds are good for the compost pile. Particularly nutgrass stands out in my mind as a weed that you just want to keep away from your compost pile and your gardens, for that matter. I've just spent 3 months recovering my beds from nutgrass, so I'm coming off of a long-term project there, but feel really good about staying with it, because nutgrass is really a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Right now we want to welcome into the discussion on compost a great pioneer and advocate of compost making and excellent compost making, amigo Bob Contisano. Amigo has 40 years of multiple crop organic farming experience, 30 years of organic farm advising in the Western U.S., Hawaii, tropical Central and South America, and worldwide. He's an author, lecturer. He does outreach, and he's going to consult with us today. We're really grateful. We had him back on the show back in February when he came through to do some workshops here on Kauai, and we're really so tickled that he would join us again to celebrate this fall fun drive. So, amigo Bob, welcome back.
Well, thank you. Aloha.
Where do we find you today?
I'm actually standing out on my porch. We've just had about an inch of rain, which is we're here in the Sierra Foothills, and it has a rarely rain this year, so we're rejoicing in some fresh moisture. It feels like fall and rain to boot.
What a blessing.
Awesome, awesome. Well, you know, we're right here smack in the middle of our compost pile right now, Bob. I wonder if you'd mind just joining in. We've been talking to folks about, you know, how to manage your food scraps and what kind of compost heap you might want to be building, and some of the best green and brown materials found here on Kauai. And we wanted to talk next about staging materials, and I wonder what your opinion is. Is it better to just make a big heap all at once, or stage materials and make your compost sort of slowly in layers? What's your recommendation there?
Well, you know, most of the time on garden scale, it's pretty hard to have enough material to make a good pile all at once. Rarely do you accumulate a lot. I mean, I guess if I had my choice, I would do it all at once in one big pile. But typically, we accumulate material slowly over time. So my approach to that on a smaller scale is to just essentially accumulate it in piles, keep the material separate. But when you're ready to make a pile, then you combine everything together at once. If you do it in layers, it works, but what ends up happening, you get lots of different levels of composting. You get some stuff that's active, some that's not active enough because it's too near the surface and drying out rapidly, and then other material which is getting ready that needs to be turned and yet hasn't gotten turned because you're waiting for the other stuff to get started. So my habit typically is to just, you know, pile up the materials in separate piles, and then when it's time to, I've got at least enough material to make a 4-foot by 4-foot pile and about 4 feet tall, which takes a while if it's in a garden. Then I combine them all together. So that's how we do it. Now, if you've got a whole bunch of weeds at one time, or, you know, you did a lot of clearing, or there's a lot of grass clippings or something, then you can make a pile up rapidly. But at least around our gardens, they tend to kind of accumulate sort of slow.
And so when it comes to staging, if you're going to plan on doing that all-at-once pile, which I love to do as well, but you're managing your vegetable waste, which gets kind of putrid pretty fast, how do you hold that on for the big pile that might only be built once every month or two?
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, with those, when you have vegetable waste, which is high in liquids and does go rapidly putrid, that I typically layer in with some dry material and let that slowly compost. So it's not an active hot compost. It's kind of a slower one. So I might mix that with some leaves or dry grass or whatever I had available to bulk it up, but not necessarily start a compost pile. Because you're right, if you just leave that sitting there, it'll get green and funky on you pretty quick.
Right. So when I'm figuring my green and brown material, if I've been doing that layering, which I do as you describe, and I'm finally making the pile, then maybe I'm not computing that as a high nitrogen material anymore because it's already kind of done some composting.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, I would assume at that point in time it's close to neutral or even more on the brown stage because a fair amount of the nitrogen's already been utilized by the bacteria in the decomposition process because they are sort of slowly breaking it down. So I at that point in time, I lean towards putting more nitrogen and green material in, just assuming that there's not enough from what I started with.
And so what are your favorite nitrogen additives?
Oh, I think my all-time favorite is dairy manure.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. But, of course, you can't find it all the time. So, you know, I use pretty much whatever we can find. So that could be fresh clippings. That could be fresh vegetation waste. Cover crops. If I have a cover crop that's, I want to use a portion of it, I might cut it with a sickle or a scythe and put that in the pile. Alfalfa, if I ever have that around. You know, we kind of scavenge around for what's around. In the springtime, there's a lot of green material. In the fall, it's more difficult to find it, so I have to kind of go to search around a little bit more. I just scraped out the chicken coop the other day, which was a great source of nitrogen. So you kind of have to be creative based on the time of the season.
Sure. And then when you're coming to build your pile, I'm curious, do you utilize inoculants of any kind?
Actually, I used to, but I learned that if you utilize compost from a previous pile, it's a more effective inoculant than anything you could, but you can make or buy really nice inoculants. But what I've learned is that if you take about 10% by volume of previously finished compost and add that, so it's 90% fresh material and 10% compost, you're inoculating your pile with very active microorganisms that have been adapted to the kind of composting you do and the environment you're in. Mm-hmm. And you basically continue to make a culture like that and you keep saving it. It's a little bit like the sourdough starter, grandma started. Over time, those things get more adapted ecologically. So there are some wonderful inoculants you can purchase or make, but I've found that if the compost is, it's a nice finished material, it's the best inoculant you can get.
Sure. For our folks who may be starting their first ever compost pile, I wondered if something like LAB might be a good inoculant for the beginners.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. And, yeah, I was thinking of more somebody who's been doing it well. For a first-timer, yeah, two choices might be to go to a friend that's making compost and get some of their compost as a starter. Or also you could make the lactobacillus culture up, which is a pretty straightforward process, and that will speed the initial decomposition process because the lactobacilli are rapid decomposers, and they colonize the carbon and nitrogen material and break it down rapidly. So that'd be a great initial inoculant. And it's not very difficult to make it.
No, and fun too. So now that we've assembled our materials, we've done some layering, whether it's all at once or day after day, but we're thinking about managing the pile. And I think this is where there's such a divergence in terms of how people feel, how important it is to turn it, how often, measuring the temperature and ensuring that we're killing pathogens, we're killing weed seeds, but we're not letting it get too hot because that kills the beneficials. This is where I think that the common sense of compost gets a bit technical, and maybe there's the possibility that people feel like, oh, it's too complicated at this point. What do I do?
Yes, it can be a bit overwhelming. So you kind of have to decide that based on what your raw materials are that you're putting in there. If you have something that you're concerned that it's a weed, for example, that might germinate or survive, then you need to get the temperature up in the compost process. If you've got diseased plant material you're putting in there, then you're going to want to break that down with heat. And that heat only comes by bacterial activity. So on the other hand, if it's material, well, actually, I don't think I have all that much issues with what I'm putting here as raw material, then the need for creating heat and for turning it becomes less. And so I have different kinds of piles in my place, ones that, you know, we might turn a couple of times to get them started, and then we just let them go. Other ones we're more diligent about because we're concerned with the risk of weeds or diseases somehow surviving the pile. So in order to kill pathogens and weeds, you need to get up temperatures around 130 to 140 degrees, which you can have a compost thermometer. It'll help you tell that, or you can use your hands to give you a sense of it. You can stick your hand in a pile at the bottom. The temperature gets going near the bottom of the pile if you've made it correctly. That's where the maximum environment for these bacteria to get going are proliferating. And put your hand in there. If it's too hot to put your hand in there, that's a starting spot. You can at least know that you're making a hot pile. You mentioned the possibility of getting it too hot, and that is an issue. It can, if it gets over about 160 degrees, and some people say 150, but somewhere in that range, then you actually start killing off a lot of the good microbes, and you also lose a lot of nitrogen back to the air. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get good at this, a thermometer is pretty much indispensable. It doesn't have to be a fancy one. But something that gets you a sense of where you're hitting 130, 140 degrees. And so these are aerobic organisms, and they're consuming oxygen, and that's what they're eating. They're eating the organic material, the nitrogen and the carbon, and they're consuming water, and they're consuming oxygen. And at some point in time, one of those elements is going to become limiting, and when that does, then their population is going to start to decrease. Mm. And the most common thing that happens when those temperatures are high like that is they run out of oxygen. So that's why turning it becomes valuable, because you add more air. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you have the opportunity to add some more water, which is usually what you need to do because you need to keep it moist, and temperature drives off moisture. So typically when you flip it over, then that's the opportunity to add some more water and check your pile out, see how uniform it is and whether most of it's breaking down. And the other opportunity there, especially if you're dealing with weeds, is you want to get those outside plant material into the center, because the compost temperatures on the outside aren't nearly high enough to kill the pathogens or the weeds. So when you mix it, then you want to put the outside material back in the middle and the inside material more out to the outside. And then, depending on how fast you want to compost, kind of tells you how many times you want to turn it. You can make a really nice compost in 21 days if you're willing to turn it every day or so. Wow. Or you can have a much slower compost that takes many months. It's sort of more of a question of what your end needs are.
Awesome. This is In the Garden on the Farm. We are speaking with amigo Bob Contesano. He's got lots of experience making good organic compost, which is our feature for the past couple of weeks. And we've done the turning. We're monitoring the temperature, the moisture. And then how the common question, how do you know when it's done?
Yeah, you know, you may have already spoke to this, but I wanted to just make one other comment. You know, in your climate, it's really, and actually in our climate in the winter as well, in most winters anyway, there's a big challenge here is keeping it from getting too wet. Mm-hmm. Saturation actually is also detrimental to the microbes. So you want to avoid the problem of it getting oversaturated, which needs to be that it needs to be moist enough, like a potting soil moisture. But if it gets super wet, then it starts killing off the aerobic organisms. So we cover them or put them in a protective environments underneath a shed roof or something. But don't cover them with a plastic-type material because it'll starve off the oxygen, just like putting something in a plastic bag will do. So, you know, there's a composting materials are actually made for this task. They're called compost covers, different kinds of them. Or if you do need to use some type of a tarp, just a regular tarp, and put a space in between it so that there's a room for air between the tarp and the pile. I've done it with tires, for example. You just take some old used tires and sit them on top of the pile and then put the tarp on top of that, and then that allows air underneath there and still keeps the extra rainfall off. So anyway, just to mention that one because I know that high rainfall sites run into those problems some years.
Thank you. Yeah, that is a big issue for us here. We get a lot of rain, so we're grateful for it, but it can sog up the pile for sure.
Exactly. And then once they're soggy, they're a pain in the butt to deal with, truthfully.
Yeah, it's sludgy then and smelly,
yeah,
too.
And if it does get like that, then you got to open it up and aerate it out, maybe add some more dry material in there and start it up again, because once it goes anaerobic on you, it's really hard for it to start up. So
right,
keeping it from getting too wet is as important as managing the moisture.
But all is not lost. We do have ways to dry it out again.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, the cool thing about compost is it's incredibly resilient. You know, even if it dies off, it starts back up again, or it will eventually decompose in a slower fashion. So all is not lost if you don't make a perfect compost pile. You just keep on going. It's one of those things, it's like learning how to bake something new. You know, you make the first time, it's okay. The second time, it's better. And the third or fourth time, you go, oh, now I really know how to do that. Mm-hmm. At least that's how it works for me. I mean, some people are really good at this stuff, but I'm not. So, you know, composting the same way. You make a pile, you learn the best you can from it. You go, okay, here's what I learned. Okay, and then next time I'm going to make a little bit better and keep getting better at it. Now, back to your question about when it's done. Well, done is variable based on what you started with. But essentially what you started with, you shouldn't be able to see much or any of that any longer. Whatever those materials were, they should be broken down and looking soil-like. You know, dark brown is optimum. If it's black, it means it got a little bit too hot. But basically, should dark mats that smell good, should smell wonderful earthy soil, like walking out into the rainforest on a rainy day, that kind of wonderful odor. And it should be crumbly and easy to deal with. Now, there's always going to be little chunks and pieces left. That's normal because not everything composts uniformly. If it's really chunky still, then you might want to screen it and take the chunky stuff and put it back in your next compost pile, which can act as an inoculant. Essentially, you can use it that way, and that's typically what we do with our chunky stuff is just recycle it. And the other part of that is the temperature should have cooled back down to something close to ambient temperature, so it should have gotten hot, 130, 140 degrees, which can last weeks if you've got a really inactive pile and you turn it frequently, and then it kind of cools down a bit, and there's a fungal stage that takes place, and if you do a really good job, you should actually see these white mycelia fungi growing in there. That's actually a sign that you really accomplished something. That's like making the wonderful cake that won the county fair or something. It's if you see a lot of that white fungi that smell really good, those are known as actinomycetes. They're a fungal relative, and they grow and they feed on the bacteria that were in the initial part of the pile. And they come in later when it's cooler and the compost is curing. So what you'd like to see is lots of those fungi in dark, rich, crumbly soil that smells awesome. And now you're done.
Mm-hmm. Time to put it on the garden beds.
Yes, and a couple thoughts there. You're dealing with a living material. It's alive, and you want to treat it like that. If you just leave it out in the sun for months on end or even weeks on end, a lot of those living organisms get desiccated or die from ultraviolet light. So you want to treat it like a living culture, just like if you were making yogurt or any other living culture, you need to treat it appropriately, and compost is that way as well. So to take full advantage of that biology you just grew, you want to keep it moist, keep it protected from sun until it's ready to apply, and then put it into the soil and work it in fairly fast and into moist soil so that those bacteria and fungi can recolonize rapidly into the soil. And we also use compost on the surface and don't till it in, and there's lots of no-till systems like that. But you don't get as much biology with that system, so a little bit of a trade-off. But for most garden soils, typically people are going to work them up. So if you are, then make sure that you handle that compost in its freshest state possible and think of it as a living culture, and you're trying to get it into that ground so it can do its job.
Oh, sorry, and get it turned under so that it doesn't get exposed to any of that sunlight.
Yeah, I mean, the less time it's exposed to sunlight, the better. Again, sometimes with mulching, you leave it out on the surface and live with its loss, but if you're working it in and want to get the maximum effect for your veggie garden, then get it in the ground moist, get it out of the sunlight quickly, and in the top 6 inches or so, it doesn't need to be very deep because, again, it likes oxygen. So you know, the microbes need air, so if you put it 2 feet deep in the soil, there's just not going to be much air for them. So near the surface is best.
Excellent.
One thing I like to do as well when I deem it is at least ready to begin using, I'll still find that there are some chunks in there, and it's nice to screen out whatever may remain, and that actually makes a really nice addition back into the compost pile for that re-inoculation process you talked about, where I don't have to sacrifice any of the compost that's that perfect particulate size. Instead, I'm screening out bits of wood, bone, or maybe avocado pits or other things that just haven't completely broken down but are completely inoculated with the microorganisms to put back into the pile.
Yeah, that's exactly what I like to do, too. That screening process both gives you a chance to see how good a job your microbes did, and also gives you that woody or partly broken down material that will act as an inoculant for the next pile, and you can put the good stuff right into the garden.
Great. Well, amigo, thanks so much. And we wonder if you have any words for our listeners as we're in our fall fun drive right now, and I know you're active in your local community radio station, and we have gotten some great pledges already today, and wonder if you have any great words for our listeners along those lines.
Oh, thank you for throwing me a softball, Robin.
Yeah,
I mean, community radio is the last of real radio. I mean, the rest of the radio world has become corporate and dominated by the interests that drive the political spectrum in directions that most of us aren't comfortable with. You know, community radio is the place where people have a voice. People can come into your radio station and come into our community radio station. I'm on KVMR in Nevada City regularly as a garden show, and also I do the good news on our local station. And people have access to the airs. They can get on the air and talk about their issues. They can discuss that stuff. Also, you hear a spectrum of information and music that you don't hear on commercial radio. I mean, when I'm in Kauai, I listen to KKCR all the time because the music's awesome, and the political stuff is awesome, and the talk is awesome. And you don't hear that on any other station from what I can see on the island. So I think it's really important for people to support this, because radio stations like this don't just have endless supplies of money that come from space. They all run on essentially the effort of the volunteers like yourselves and the money that comes from the community, whether it's underwriters or individuals. And this is an opportunity for those listening right now to support this kind of station and this kind of programming, or else you get to hear gardening shows talk about making compost piles, making your garden better. You know, these are things that are essential to our lifestyle and to success and to the health of the planet. And community radio is the last vestige of it. There's very few of us left doing this, and without your support, it won't be here. It's just, it comes down to individuals taking action and going and making a phone call and supporting the radio station. So I urge all to get on the air, become an activist, become part of the volunteer community, and put your money where your mouth is and your ears are, and lend some support to the radio station.
Thanks, amigo.
Well, that was a home run hit. Thank you, amigo Bob. You could be part of our team anytime.
Thank you for what you're doing. Yeah, and folks call in. So what number do they need to call?
So they can call in at 826-7774 or 826-7771. Off-island, toll-free, 866-275-1112. And you can also donate on our webpage at kkcr.org.
Awesome.
Thanks, amigo. Until next time.
Aloha. We'll see you in the islands.
Aloha.
So as you can see, Kauai Community Radio is spontaneous. It lives and grows because of dedicated volunteers and dedicated listeners like you. It flourishes when we take the time to tend it. Now is the time to support KKCR. Please give us a call, 826-7774, 826-7771, and make your pledge to Kauai Community Radio. We're going to play a little song right now to give you some time to call in. You won't miss any of our great information. Mahalo nui.
Talking squash, spinach, and potatoes. Vegetables enough to feed a king. Homegrown is the very best. Homegrown, yes, yes, yes. We've got those eggplant, broccoli, and Brussels sprout. And if we pickle the cabbage, we'll have sauerkraut. Well, there's herbs, flowers, and that ain't all. There's a garden full of goodness, gonna last till fall.
That was Alan Thomas with Homegrown, and we are back here on In the Garden on the Farm with just a couple of minutes left to go. We want to thank so much our generous donors during this KKCR program helping us keep on air. We just thank you so much, Marin, for calling in. Also, Son and Jay, Steve, Jessica and Yaro and Shaka, thanks for helping to support us. Robin and I will be back on air next Wednesday. It'll still be the fun drive. We encourage you to continue calling in, but also consider supporting us next week. We put so much into the show. We love you so much, and we need your support to keep going. So just a couple of announcements. The Hawaii Tropical Fruit Growers Meeting is happening tomorrow, Thursday, October 16th, from 5 to 7 p.m. It's going to be at the Kua'aina Farm in Molawa'a. And in order to get more information about that monthly meeting, you can call Scott at 651-9879. Malama Kauai has a Project Learning Tree Environmental Education Workshop series coming up, starting also tomorrow, Thursday, October 16th. Friday and Saturday as well. For more information, go to their website, malamakauai.org. And we want to encourage you as well to get involved with your community food forest. We're having our third Saturday workday this Saturday up in Kalihiwai, 9:30 to 3. And we've got a lot of transformations to do in this season when the rains are returning. We're doing a lot of chop and drop and loving up and uncovering some of our fruit trees. Love to have you be involved in that as well. To hear previous broadcasts of this show, you can go to kkcr.org, click the audio archive tab at the top of the page. We want to thank all the great programmers and staff here at KKCR for helping to keep us on air. And please stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations. Tracy's standing right next to me now, and she always gives us a great show for a couple of hours, essential community building show, followed up by the Papule Show with Shaka Kayaka from 3 to 5. And overall, we just want to say mahalo nui loa for tuning in to your Kauai community radio station in the garden on the farm. Your host, Paul and Robin, we want to thank our special guest on the show today, amigo Bob Contesano. If you want to be in touch with him, you can find him, you can email him at orgamigo, that's O-R-G-A-M-I-G-O, at gmail.com. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation with on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha. I'm going to do our station identification, top of the hour, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Hala'iva, and K224CQ Molawa'a. You're listening to Kauai Community Radio, and we're going to go out with Raining Revolution.